That was louder than expected. All right, so we actually learned Sanhedrin last time and actually also the time before. I don't know if anyone remembers. It's been a while in between. So the first time we did Perek Chelek, just for fun, and then last time we did actually also from Perek Ben Sora and Moreh. We did a later part of the Gemara. We talked about Baba Machteret. And I remember at the time I mentioned that Ben Sora and Moreh is one of the best prakim in all of Shas. By best, I mean there's a lot of really interesting sugyot that excite people's imagination. And so I thought, well, let's look at some other ones. So this is actually from right at the beginning. This is, we're probably not even going to get past the first amud over here of the perek. And it is about Ben Sora and Moreh. The first about three dapim of the perek are about Ben Sora and Moreh. And then it goes into something else. So the Mishnah over here begins with Ben Sora Umoreh. Meimatai Nase Ben Sora Umoreh. The Mishnah doesn't bother trying to define what it is at the beginning, at least. We can give it our best shot in terms of what the meaning of the words is. It's kind of confusing. We're not really sure. The Rishonim argue about what exactly the words mean. Ben Sora Umoreh. When it's generally translated, it's translated as either wayward or rebellious. So rare is to turn.
Stray?
Yeah, to stray and to turn. And moreh is usually understood of as to rebel, but could also mean to teach, which might be also an indication of what the issue is.
That he's leading other people their own way.
Right, maybe. Which could be something could be indicative over there for and could be helpful for understanding what happens to him, happens to him. But the first thing the Mishnah wants to deal with is at what point can a Ben Sora Umoreh become a Ben Sora Umoreh? Just a recap. The Torah talks about this child that he's doing some bad stuff. Well, I don't know if we're going to get into all the bad stuff that he's doing, but he meets a very, very ugly end. He actually ends up getting killed by the Beit Din. He gets brought to Beit Din by his parents, and he gets skila. And the actual description of what he's done doesn't seem to correspond to the punishment that he's given. That's one of the telltale signs about the Ben Sora Umoreh. But the Mishnah is interested in is this happening to a 36-year-old, to a 70-year-old, to a 5-year-old? Who is this happening to? So the Mishnah says, Mishi avi shtei sa'arot. Right. Some of this gets a little bit, I don't want to say graphic, but it gets very specific. Until he brings two hairs, these are two pubic hairs, Yakif Zakana Tachton, this is Lashon Naki, for the pubic area, that it happens down, around that area. Zakan is a beard, it's a euphemism over there. Zakana Tachton Veloha Elyon, it has nothing to do with the beard on his face, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with pubic hairs. Ella, Shadibur Chachamim Velashon Akiyash Ne'amar Ki Yeh Le'ish Ben V'lo Bat Ben V'lo Ish Kat V'lo Ish. Sorry, let me read that again. Ne'amar Ki Yeh Le'ish Ben V'lo Bat Ben V'lo Ish Katan Patur Shelo Balichal Mitzvot. So this is how the Chachamim described it. The Torah says Ki Yeh Le'ish Ben. How do you want to translate this? Let's translate it. Very simply at the beginning, when a man has a son, ki yeh le'ish ben. So the Mishnah has three things to say about it. Number one, ben v'lo bat. It only happens to a boy, cannot happen to a girl.
A girl who strays is
right. There's
not
no such thing as a bat sorer or moreh. Why? Because the Torah says ben. Okay. Number two, because it says ben, it's ben v'lo ish. That means he's not going to be an ish. What's an ish? An adult, right? An adult. Okay, so that means he's minor, right? That means he's a katan. But then look at the last part. Katan patur. Shelo balichal mitzvot. But a katan, someone who's below the age of 13, is patur because he doesn't have any mitzvot. So he can't be held responsible for violating anything because he doesn't have any of the mitzvot.
And this katan means before two hairs. Two hairs doesn't necessarily mean 13.
Okay, so what's your interpretation?
So there's I don't know what veloish means.
Okay.
But there's katan before he has two hairs, and then when he has two hairs, that's already.
What's a katan?
B- Before he has two hairs, anything.
Oh, anything before two hairs.
Until two hairs.
Okay, two hairs means he's now not a katan anymore.
He's not a katan anymore from this point of view.
And then what? And then he can be a benzo or a more?
Maybe. Even before his bar mitzvah.
Be definitive.
Yeah.
So he could be 12 and a half, and he has two hairs.
Yep.
And now he can be a ben Sormer until 13, you're saying?
Until he's an ish.
Until he's an ish, which is when?
Yeah, 13.
So you're saying that when he has two hairs, he's no longer a katan, but he's not yet an ish. And then when he turns 13, he becomes an ish. You've made that up.
Yep.
Okay, fine. But it works.
It's a reasonable assumption.
It fits the criteria, right? Yeah. He has to have hairs, but he can't be an ish, and he can't be a ben. Okay.
It seems to be that if you are 13 and still did not have two hairs, then you can still not be a ben Sora Umore.
Okay, so that's another option. So until you're 13, you're a ben.
You are katan.
And then if you don't have two hairs yet, then you can't be an ish. So now you're between 13 and two hairs.
Mm-hmm. 13 has no significance. Two hairs, we just say 13 because we don't go around checking people.
Is that true? So you're saying that if we knew for sure that a 10-year-old had two hairs, he'd be a gadol.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. Okay.
He'd be a ish.
The ish seems to be different.
No,
the katan isn't the problem. Ish is the problem. Katan is a very specific halachic.
I think the question is, are we defining a bar mitzvah boy as an ish? Is a 13-year-old an ish?
When he stops being a katan.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's the same question.
No, I think when it stops being katan, it's clear. Stop being katan halachically when you have two hairs, which we say is 13.
Or when he's 13.
Whenever. we call it 13 because it's a sign. I don't want to go around that.
Okay. Before we even get to the Gemara, let's look at what Rashi has to say. Rashi wrote commentary on the Mishnah, so let's see what Rashi has to say. So the second one says, Mishuavi beit bet sarot, ava mikmehach ilo mi anish. Before he has two sarot, he cannot get an onesh. What category does that fit? Meaning, what's the word that you would use for that? There's a word that the Mishnah uses for that.
Enar?
No, katan, right? Katan lo balech lal mitzvot, right? And therefore should not be able to be punished, right? Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that has nothing to do with onesh. Could be wrong. Okay, there he does.
Yep.
He says balechla mitzvot, meaning until he has two hairs, he's a katan. Sounds like, yeah, it sounds like what Rashi is saying. Let's go three ahead. Shenemar ben velo ish. Here is a longer comment. V'zeh mishahikif zakan ish. Mishahikif zakan ishu. Va'af agav de ben mikatnuto karui ben lo matzina lechiyuve mikmei shiavi stei sarot de katan patur shelo bachlal mitzvot. Okay, hilkach chiyuve bater hachihu va'af agav de mechimaiti stei sarot leinyan kol haTorah ish ave mihu kimiat dekra lav batchilat ishuto kam memait kedem mefarish b'gemara ben hasamoch lebruato shel ish. Okay, now he's cheating. Alma batchilat ishuto chayavekra. You know what? We have to jump into the Gemara because Rashi's giving stuff away, so we might as well go into the Gemara. So we understand some of the issues that are going on over here. We're trying to figure out at what age a ben sora more is considered a ben sora more. Katan minalan de patur. That's the first question the Gemara asks. What does that mean?
How do we know that?
Okay, so now, is that a good question? Is that a good question?
No, the Mishnah already said.
The Mishnah already said why a katan is going to be pater. It said, katan patur shelo ba'achal mitzvot.
So,
this is the point where in the past, I would sit with my chavrusa and we would argue about what's going on. Like, why is it asking this question? And then, after 20 minutes of arguing, we would look at the next line, and the next line says, "Minalan kedektani tamis shelo ba'alechla mitzvot." What do you mean, why? The Mishnah says, because he doesn't have mitzvot.
Question is, how does the Mishnah determine that this is what needs to make sense?
Well, hold on. So the Gemara says, that's not a good question, so we have to re-understand. But the Gemara is recording a question that was asked in the Beit Midrash. So the first attempt at understanding the question failed because it's already answered by the Mishnah. But furthermore, the Gemara says, "Vatu hecha ashkahan da anish hakatuv dahacha libay kra lemiftere." And second of all, by the way, how do you know? The question itself seems strange. Let's say we didn't even have a Mishnah. We didn't even need the Mishnah to have a problem with this question. The Gemara wants to know, how do we know that a katan is patur from the onesh of Ben Sora or Moreh?
Little class for mitzvah. We don't need a Mishnah.
Katan is always patur from mitzvot, which is what the Mishnah says. But anyways, do we need a pasuk to tell us this? Do we need a pasuk to tell us that a katan is patur from skila for violating Shabbos?
We do.
But
the very nature of the mitzvah.
What do you mean?
The whole Torah is on him, for him to keep him. So he's the guilt in the thing, but the term bends or whatever.
But the whole thing is like a, it's like a fork. Yeah. It's totally not something you can compare to other mitzvot.
What do you think?
No, because that's for all mitzvot, though. We say this for every mitzvah.
What?
If you're under if you're a katan, then...
But Meir is saying that Ben Sora Mora is so glaringly different from other mitzvot, because the punishment doesn't fit the crime.
That's like saying we don't make Shabbos, but actually, you know, if it's because of nefesh, we do make Shabbos. So in all other cases, it does apply, but here's an exception where it doesn't apply. You can't assume that it does apply. We don't know what the halakha is.
Doesn't seem so exceptional to me. I mean,
it doesn't seem exceptional to you?
No, I mean there are a lot of so to speak strange mitzvot, and it's the same thing. A katan is not chayev or wouldn't be punished for it.
So I think
punished for a mitzvah for not performing a mitzvah.
He's being punished for something he did. He's being punished for something that he did, right?
A few things that he did.
Yeah, a few things that he did. And it's strange because the things that he did, if he was completely an adult, we wouldn't punish him this way. But for some reason, we do for a child.
But
so.
You got a mitzvah, the classic saying. You got a love.
Okay. But so what? I don't know what. Why?
So
what?
Like we're saying, what's he patur from?
He's patur from the onesh.
From being one. From being
yeah.
Sort of
yeah.
From being exactly.
For being for getting skila for doing this. If a 5-year-old did it, we wouldn't punish him this way.
So they want Ben Sora.
Okay.
Is punished for something he doesn't do.
He does more than just not listen to his parents. Okay. You know what? You guys are both going to be right. So the Gemara solves it and says, Anan hachi kaminan. No, this is what the question was. Atu ben sore more al chet onerag? Al shem sofonerag. Vekevand al shem sofonerag. Afilu katanami. Here's what was going on. The Gemara knew that a katan, when he's katan, the ben sora moria, when he's punished, like I said many times, the punishment does not fit the crime, and so something else must be going on. And so it's understood from the beginning that when we punish this boy, it's not for what he's done, but rather it's for what he's going to do. It's a big chiddush, this big rule that apparently the Torah tells us that the following actions are an indication that he's going to do something. And therefore, the rule is, in this case, his parents bring him to Beit Din, and we kill him at that point. Okay, now, there's a lot of work that still needs to be done to understand that, but the concept of Nidon al-Shem Sofo tells you that something different is going on. And since it's Nidon al-Shem Sofo, so what does that mean for it? It means that maybe a katan would be included in this. Maybe if he's 10 and we get these indications, we should also kill him. So that's the question that the Gemara is asking. In other words, I get it. I know that if it's just an issue of onesh for an avera, a katan wouldn't be included. But it's something so different over here, so I would expect that they would be included. And therefore, the Gemara answers, how do we know that they're not included? Now, in the end, they're not included. He's not included, a 5-year-old. But he could have been. Right?
Like Minority Report.
Yeah, three times.
It's very much like Minority Report.
Like what?
Tom Cruise movie about computer that... It's a computer, right?
No, it's
computer.
It's people.
People. Okay, it would have been better if it was a computer. People that can tell the future and can tell that somebody's going to commit a crime, and so they catch the person before they commit the crime. But we all remember it because Tom Cruise manipulates the computer with his hands. Anyways. Afilu katan nami. So you might have thought that. So that's what you might have thought. V'od, and this is what Mike, you said this. V'od, ben, v'lo ish, katan mashma. Look at the Torah. It calls him a ben. Ben sorer moreh. It doesn't say ish sorer moreh. So I think I'm within my rights to expect that a child would be punished. So those two arguments are brought to show that we do need some kind of evidence from the Torah that a child But underage is not going to be included in this parasha. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Amar Kra, the Torah says, V'chiyah le'ish ben ha-samuch le'gvurato shel ish. It must be a ben ha-samuch le'gvurato shel ish. Because it's got juxtaposed ish and ben. Okay, now what is Rav actually saying over here? So Rav, he's actually saying something very interesting. The way I interpreted the pasuk before, I said it means when a man has a son, right? That's not how Rav reads the pasuk. Rav reads the pasuk when a boy becomes a man. Ki yeh le'ish ben. When he becomes a man, the boy, Yoda, right?
The boy becomes a man.
When he becomes a man,
ben le'ish.
Exactly. Well, okay, good. So yes, you know, hold on to that. Hold on to that. But that's Rav is noticing that it's a strange phrase over here, and we're going to see why it's strange. But Rav is using that to show that it has to be a boy who is becoming a man, which also tells us that it is also it only occurs at that transition point. Okay. Now, what it ends up meaning, lamaisa, is that he must be an adult, okay? Whatever an adult means. Does Rashi tell us? Remember? Rashi says, L'chshiyagia l'chlal ish ha-ben hazeh korelo ha-katuv ben sorer u'moreh. When he becomes a man, the Torah calls him a ben sorer u'moreh. I can tell you that at the end of the day, what it means is that the child has to be at least 13, and the Shesarot come in, but we'll get there. And he basically is about a 3-month window where he can be a Ben Sorer Moreh. That's basically what it is. But between 13 and 3 months.
I thought the Gemara was asking something completely different, which is an interesting question. How do we know that before 13 you're not liable for...
That is the question that Gemara was asking.
No, not for Ben Sorer, Bichlal. Where does that come from? How do we know that the relevance of a mitzvah, in terms of mitzvah? I thought I was asking...
No, I was not asking that question.
But in any case, I'm asking the question.
So, I mean, anytime the Torah says ish. It always says ish.
How do we, the age of 13 or 2, Sarah, where does it come from?
That's a good question. But we know that they have to be an adult. Whatever an adult means. Where the age comes from. Good. So the Gemara, I don't think we're enough time, actually. Okay. We're not going to get all the way to the Gemara with the number 13. We're not going to get there. It's like, it's much later. But it's here. It's mostly from Bezalel.
From what?
It comes from biological facts, and it comes from Bezalel, the architect. He's kind of the reason for 13 is the bar mitzvah age. But we're not going to get there today. So that's this section, okay? So this talked about whether or not a katan is... how do we know that a katan is pater? Now, we do have a... The Gemara doesn't address one thing now. There's one loose end that we haven't tied up. You know, if we look at the big picture, we zoom out for a second, and we look at the Mishnah and the Gemara, there's one loose end over here.
Which is Shalom Balech
Mitzvot. The Mishnah didn't say that.
Yeah, it says Shalom Balech Mitzvot.
Right, the Mishnah said Shalom Balech Mitzvot. It didn't bring this Pasuk. Rav brought a Pasuk. Why didn't the Mishnah bring the Pasuk? The Mishnah thought it was good enough to say Shalom Balech Mitzvot. Now, there are different ways out. Maybe the Mishnah is explaining how Rav reads the Pasuk. Okay, so he's an Ish. The reason why he's not going to be Chayav is because it's Lobach HaMetzot or something like that. Tosas addresses it. I don't remember if I actually understood what Tosas says. He does address it. The top Tosfos, like the fourth line in the top Tosfos, it says V'im Tomar. The second word in the line, it says V'im Tomar Im Kain Lama Lan B'matnitin Tama Shelo Balech HaMetzot. Why does the Mishnah mention the reason of Lo Balech HaMitzvot? V'yesh lomar, the Hava Amina, there was a Hava Amina, the Mikodem Havad Sarot, Matchil Hazman, the Samach L'Gvurato. There was a Hava Amina that Samach L'Gvurato actually begins before Shtei Sarot, Shal Ish, V'afilu Aveyot, Migimel Chadashim, Lo Ava Chayshinan, B'ma Shebimei Katnut, Kevan Deinu Ra'ui Laholid, Karina Be'ben V'lov. It gets complicated because it has to do with the rest of the Gemara. I think he's saying something along the lines of what Yoel was suggesting. That was a Havamina. That there was going to be, that the child, even before two Sarot, was going to be an adult. But hold off on that. Okay. Yeah? All right, let's go a little bit further. The Gemara says, V'ad she'akif zakana tachton. All right, so that's the Shir. Tani Rabbi Chiya ad she'akif atara. Okay, kiat rav dimya amar akafat gid, v'lo akafat beitzim. All right, very, very specific. They want to tell you exactly which pubic hair is, how much pubic hair. There's a machlokas about how much you need. Fine. Amar rav chista, this is important. Katan sheholid ein beno naase ben sorer more. Right, here's another rule. There's like a ton of rules about ben sorer more. Here's another one.
It can't happen.
If a child has a child, then it's not, that child can't be a ben sorer more. Shenemar.
Which one? The father or the son?
The son. In other words, if a, let's say the an 11-year-old.
The son of an 11 or 12-year-old.
Yes. Let's say an 11-year-old has a child. Determined. That child cannot be considered a ben sorer more. We can get into, exactly. But what's the problem with that? So hold on. So he says, because Shenemar kiyeh le'ish ben. Le'ish ben v'lo le'ben ben. Uh-huh. But what's the problem here?
It's not the interpretation we just read before.
Yeah, fed. Well, he says, wait a second. Hai mi bai lelich Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. But we need that for Rav Yehuda Amar Rav's limud. That it's not ki yele'ish ben. It's ki yele'ish ben. Or I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to do it.
Reorder it. Ki yele'ish ben.
Which one is that? It's that. In other words, Rav says when the boy becomes a man, and Rav Yechista says that when the man has a boy. So you got to pick one. Which one is it? That it's a good question.
They disagree.
Oh, it could be, but then you got to lose one.
Why?
Are they mutually exclusive?
They are mutually exclusive.
So then one of them we got to throw away. Either an 11-year-old can't have a ben sorer more, or an 11-year-old can be a ben sorer more.
Or you can have, once he has a ben sorer more, he's not no longer a ben. If his father's a child, he can't still be a ben.
Ooh. Why not? What?
The father of a child, you're still calling him a ben?
Yeah, because that's an age issue. It's an age. Are you talking about from a...
Are
you talking moralistically? Like, we shouldn't call him a Ben?
No, when he's 11.
So you're saying you could have two 11-year-olds and one you would call an Ish and one you would not call an Ish?
Essentially, yeah.
Okay. I mean, we don't have to say that.
Someone's calling him Abba, right?
Abba is different. You know, you could have uncles that are, you know, 5 years old, right? Which is always, it always struck me as odd when I was a kid. And somebody would say, I'm an uncle, and he's 5 years old, right? But it's not weird.
If you're able to follow a child, physiologically, you can have two heads.
But you're assuming, right? So then you have the 13 issue, yeah. Right? So good. So we're going to get to that also. So good. So that's the question the Gemara wants to know. Im kain lemakra. So good. So how is the Gemara going to get out of this? How would you get out of this? What's the best way to get out of this? My father said, okay, it's a machloket, but that's going to leave us in a sticky position. So what would you do?
Wait, can we just leave it as a machloket? They disagree.
And then paskin like both of them?
Find another pasuk.
This one paskins like this, okay. And this one paskins like that.
They both cited this pasuk.
This one paskins like that, and that one paskins like that?
But then we can't pick both. You can't take both of them. It's tarte de satre. It seems to be a tarte de satre.
I'll try and find another pasuk.
Okay. I'm not giving you that option.
We find it brighter.
What?
We find it brighter.
In other words, you're going to find another. You want to maintain Rabbi Chiya's position, for example, and find him another source in another place. That would be a valid. That would be good. Not happening. But I like what you're thinking. You want to maintain positions and just switch up the facts. Okay, so the Gemara actually says something very hagiuni. Says, you know, we did notice, right, that the Torah was talking like Yoda over here, right? It's a weird.
It's backwards. Like, yes.
It's weird. And the Gemara says, "Yeah, im kein lemakra ki yeh ben leish." It should say, according to Rav Yehuda is saying, it should say ki yeh ben leish. The fact that it says ki yeh leish ben means something funny is going on. You're supposed to learn from it. What do you learn from it? That the boy has to be becoming a man. My ki yeh leish ben shma mina lechad Rav Chista. So what? Why does it say ki yeh leish ben? That tells you also like Rav Chista. In other words, It's weird for Rav. It's a weird lashon, so he gets to find his meaning in it, but also find Rav Chista's meaning in it. But now, if we flip it around, though, is it weird for Rav Chista? Gemara says, if that's the case, let's say, no, Rav Chista makes much more sense. You don't even need Rav. Rav's drasha doesn't make any sense anymore. So it says, no, you can't say that either. Imke nemekra ben ish, my li ish ben. It should say, ki ben ish, a son of a man. It doesn't have to say, there should be a son to a man. It's a strange thing. So, in other words, in a nutshell, we can have both drashot.
Is this too much of a stretch in the source here?
What we're noticing, and this is not uncommon, it's not the most common way to do this, but for example, very often you'll find drashot in the Gemara where two people are using the same word for two drashot. And the Gemara throws up its hand and says, whoa, flag on the play, you can't do that. And they say, no, because there's an extra vav over here at the beginning of the word. Or, because it should have said this. So the fact that it doesn't say this means that it means the pshat, and it also means something extra. So that's what's going on over here. There's the pshat, which I would argue is rechista, because that's kind of how we read the pasuk, you know, when a man has a child. But there's something extra going on over here, and so that gives Rav the license to jump in and say, I think this is why the Torah uses a strange terminology. So we get to get two drashos out of one phrase.
They even make a father a sore omore. Yeli ish ben sore omore. He's the son of a sore omore.
Okay.
It sounds like we're learning one thing from the word and another thing from the word itself. One from the word itself and the other from the order of the words.
I think so. I would have said it one thing from the plainly obvious meaning of the phrase, and then another thing from the fact that the phrase is kind of a strange order. That's how I think of it. But you could say that. Okay. You learn both. Now, this, however, does create an issue. Upliga de Rabba. The doctors in the house are going to have to put on their doctor hats. I have another page, by the way. Upliga de Rabba, da maramba, katan eno molid. Rabba says, children don't have children. By children over here, it means, presumably it means 13. It could mean the hairs, but I think it means 13. That's what it usually means by katan. How do we know? Shnamar im ein leish goel. Now this is actually a pretty famous drasha over here. It just doesn't get used over here. Pasuk says im ein leish goel. It's talking about full pasuk over here is im ein leish goel hashiv ha'asham elav ha'asham ha'mushav la'asham la'kohen milvad el ha'kipurim asher yechaper bo alav. No, it's not the aray miklat. It's a case where somebody stole. You stole from somebody, and you owe it back to them, but you can't pay them back because they died. They died, and they have no descendants.
Yeah.
That's what Ein Leish Goel means. He has no descendants. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? How could he have no descendants? Is there anybody who has no inheritors? No father, no mother, no child, no sister, no brother, nothing? How could you have somebody like that? So the Gemara says, Ela begezel hagera katuf medaber. V'amar achmana ish. Ish atatzar. Oh, you don't have this. You guys want this? We need like three lines, so I'll give it out. I don't think we're going to go past like three or four lines over here. So it says, it's talking about a Gezel HaGer. Now, why does it help to say it's Gezel HaGer?
But then he doesn't have any Yorshim.
Okay, but really is that true? Do Gerim have no Yorshim?
Unless they had children after the
killing. Exactly. If he's an ish, you have to go looking to see if he has relatives or not, if he had children or not. Right? So if he's an ish, then you have to go look. You see, does he have a wife? Does he have a child? Then you have to go looking. However, but if he's a katan, you don't have to go looking for anything because he for sure has no goalim. How do you know he doesn't have goalim? Maybe he has a relative. Maybe he has a child. How do we know that he doesn't have any goalim? So the answer is because he can't have children. That's the assumption over here. So Rabbah says that. So the point over here is that Rav Chista's got a meaningless drasha according to Rabbah, because Rav Chista says if a child has a child, it can't be a ben tzor or more. But Rabbah says that's impossible. So it would be a meaningless drasha. Okay?
I don't think today we would say that that's possible.
It's hard to see this as anything other than a machloket about metzius, which we don't like. We don't like to have machloket about reality, about science, about how things work. So one could understand it in other ways about what it means to be a katan, at what age. Maybe they're arguing about how much what you consider an ish or not an ish. But that's how this really starts out. Yeah.
It sounds like classic machloket and metzius, because it would be difficult to disprove. I mean, how would you test something like this?
Well, you would have to. You just find a child.
I know one 12-year-old who fathered a baby.
You go to an inner city public school, and
but even if you didn't know any, you wouldn't prove that it's impossible. Just prove you could.
That's true. That's true. So they would have to have some kind of scientific reason why they thought that it wasn't true. Okay.
Because it's based on a chazaka, right?
Or it could be based on a chazaka. Could be. Yeah, I mean... it's very reasonable. Maybe Rabbi wasn't even speaking biologically. He was just saying, kids don't have kids, so you don't have to actually go looking for it.
Maybe he was saying what Mike was saying earlier, that if he has a kid, then he's by definition an ish. That makes
it impossible to fit it into the pasuk. Because then it just means you have to look for everybody.
That fits very well in the pasuk.
No, because okay, so then how do you know if you have to go looking for
because
then you're saying that if he's had a child, then by definition.
But how do you know if you have to go looking for descendants or not?
Point to wrap up.
No, not talking about the previous pasuk.
No, this is the one that we're interested in right now. Okay.
It seems to me that whole sugya is not being very careful, because we said initially that it's impossible for somebody who's not a ger to not have goelim, but that's not true. It is possible. It's not likely. So maybe we're saying the same thing here. It's not likely that a katan can have a child. It certainly is possible for somebody to not have any relatives.
There was a case now, actually, where somebody was published on Facebook from a shliach for a guy who just died in the 90s. And he was a survivor of the Holocaust, and he had no family. Mm-hmm. And he never married, and he was a lone shliach with him, mm-hmm. because he had no
right.
one to...
So I'm not an expert in the laws of Yerusha, but I wonder if... I don't know, but I wonder if you just keep going until you find a relative.
Yeah. Like a
third
cousin.
There has to be a relative. By definition.
A third cousin, yes.
Yeah, by definition, there's going to be a relative. Mm-hmm. Because we started somewhere. I actually don't know.
But we say that a ger is Ben Avraham, so he too has relatives.
Yeah, but he doesn't, because once he becomes a ger, he has no relatives at all. All right. We'll stop there, and let's roll it back. We want to do two sugyot tonight. One is about... a little bit of the philosophy of the Ben Tzor or Moreh. And the other is about the dividing line between Katan and Gadol.
Okay, thank you.
So on the first side of the page, we have a piece from the Birkat Avraham of Avram Erlinger.
When did he live?
He lives now.
Where?
In Yerushalayim. Is a Rosh Yeshiva of Be'er HaTorah, I think.
Rosh Yeshiva of what did you say?
I don't remember the name of the yeshiva. I think it's Be'er HaTorah, but I can't remember. I have a sefer, I don't know. So he's writing on the first Mishnah, and he's asking a fundamental question. Let's take a look at what he says. He says, L'chore tzarich iyun. Hatana lekaman ben tzor amora nidon al shem sofo. We're about to say that ben tzor amora is judged on his end. Yamut zakai v'ayumut chayav. Why? Because this is from later on. Because we want him to die innocent and not die guilty. Now, what does that tell you, by the way, about the rationale?
Innocent
and proven guilty. No. What does that mean? Nidon al shem sofo. For whose sake is it?
For his sake.
Yeah. Right? Zakai Valimur Chayev. That's what it sounds like. The same phrase, I believe, is used by, is it Chanoch, who dies early? Mm-hmm. Right? Chanoch, yeah.
Might you say that he's likely to be Chayev Mita later anyway, so he might as well do it now rather than...
You could fit anything into it, but I think the simplest read is we're trying to cut him a break, especially since...
cut him a break by killing him now.
In a sense, because we believe in Olam Haba. Later on, in the next Mishnah, but the Mishnah after that, we'll talk about people that you're Metzilin Otan Benafshan, like a murderer, let's say. If somebody's a Rodef, so you kill them to stop them from killing somebody else. And it's actually a machok of the Rishonim, if you're killing him for his sake or for the sake of the victim. You're trying to prevent him from committing murder, or are you trying to prevent the person from being killed?
Can it be both?
It could be both, but Rishonim have different understandings over there. V'im kein, l'chora shapir yitachen shemitato gam bekatnut, me'achar shetam mitato miniyat harishut atzfuya latir. We just said, it sounds like his death, bekatnut, is to try to prevent him from becoming a rasha later. That's what our Gemara says. Is he killed for his sin, his current sin? Hashem Sofo Nereg. So now we get stuck. What's the connection between Nidon Hashem Sofo and Lo Balichlal Mitzvot? We got to pick one. And he's not just talking about the Mishnah. The Gemara also mentioned a little bit of Lo Balichlal Mitzvot. Because we want to understand what we're doing over here. Because it does have a nafka mina. We'll see. But it makes a difference. Why are we killing him? Are we killing him because he deserves it, or are we killing him because we're trying to help him from being a rasha later on? So he takes a brief aside to point out that this idea of killing not for purely punishment sake is not without precedent. What's taf?
Children.
It's children. When you have an Iron Nidachet, Iron Nidachet is a city which is completely engulfed in Avodah Zarah. You raise it to the ground, you kill the whole town, including children who seem to be innocent. You know, they aren't responsible for what they've done. We at least have a precedent for the idea of ending the lives of children, even if they aren't, so to speak, chayav in the classic sense. They're not bnei dat. So he says, "Vulai." By the way, that's I think the Ramban writes there are four cases where it's clear that the Torah says that a person is being killed. Not in proportion to what he's done. One is the Mitzor Mora. Two is, I think, is Irani Dachad. There is also the Zaken Mamre.
Reb Mochik.
No. Was that the choice of the king? The Zaken Mamre. That's not Din Torah. Zaken Mamre and the. Oof! I just had it at the tip of my tongue. Oof! Oh. And the Mesit, the person who... No, I messed up. Irani Dachat is not in there. Irani Dachat, I think, is connected. But it's the Mesit, the Zakin Mamre, the Eid Zomim, because they actually get punished for not doing something, and the Mitzor Amore. That was it. Okay. It always says, the man Yishmu V'Yiro, it says it's to warn people about it, so that they don't do this.
Are those other two cases,
the Mesid is an insider, the person who causes other people to do Avodah Zarah. Mm-hmm. So he hasn't done it. He's caused other people to do it.
And what's Zaken Mamre?
Zaken Mamre is a person who is a rabbi who paskins against the Sanhedrin, the Mesa, meaning he disagrees with the Sanhedrin, he tells people to do something against what the Sanhedrin says.
He hasn't done it himself.
What?
He hasn't done it himself.
He might do it himself too. For him to do it himself is fine. But for him to tell other people to do it is not fine.
Yom Kippur, that he had to follow the day.
Rabbi Gamaliel was that?
It was Rabbi Gamaliel versus Rabbi Yoshua.
But he dafka did it.
He did do it.
He followed, yes.
He did do it.
Yes.
But there is somebody that did become
that
somebody that they put in Nidui. You know who they put in Nidui? Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus. Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus got put in Nidui. And you remember why?
No.
That's the Tanar Shalachnei. That's the end of the Tanar Shalachnei story. The end of the Tanar Shalachnei where the walls fall in. And the end of that is Rabbi Eliezer wouldn't accept it and they had to put him in Nidui. They didn't kill him, but they had to put him in Nidui.
There wasn't a Sanhedrin then, was there? That was just more the...
There was a Sanhedrin.
There was?
Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Akiva. And yeah. Yeah. okay. So he says, so we have a precedent. He says, but that's not the best precedent. There's an element of war. This is very interesting. In Irani Dachat. Ayin Sham, Lashon Rambam. Look how the Russian Rambam expresses the concept of the Irani Dachat. Im Yamdu Be'ivaltan, Beit Din Matsuyin, Mitzavin Lakol Yisrael, La'alos Alein Latzava, Vehein Sarin Alein Vorchen Amen Milchama, Anshitipakai. They go to war against the town. So, just like in war, you don't have mercy on the children, at least when they made war back then. So too for this. But we don't have a din of a chiyuv mita for a child, we don't have. We don't have a chiyuv mita for a child anywhere. So, he says maybe another example. Gam adat korach matinu degam aktanim nivlu. The children were swallowed up. Ayin Rashi Paparshas Korach, Kama Kasha Machlokes, Shari Beizdin Sholmata in Onchin Ela Ad Sheavosh Desaros, U Beizdin Sholmala Ad Kafshana, Vekan Ivdu Afke Yonke Shadayim. Look, it's actually interesting. Rashi answers a question that answers, responds to an answer that I would have said, right? He says, Adas Korach, so you have the children that got swallowed up also. How would you get out of that?
No,
I'd say God did it, right?
Yeah.
I would say God did it. So Rashi points out that it can't be because Beit Din Shamata waits till 13, but God's supposed to wait till 20. God's supposed to wait till 20, and he didn't. Why? Because of Machloket. Machloket is so severe that in this case they had to be swallowed up. So he says,
I also could have said that we could apply the war principle. Maybe God was, so to speak, waging war against that camp.
You could, but I guess they didn't because the language of war isn't used over here. And in Rashi himself, okay, you could have, but the language of war isn't used here. Rashi chooses to go with Machlokas. That's the. It tells you about the severity of Machlokas. He wants to actually say, Chaim Shmulevitz says, actually, this is very similar to Ben Tzur Amora. He's basically saying that the children of Korach would have inevitably become Baalei Machlokes. Okay? It's a chiddush.
There's a few examples.
Does it say that? Rashi says, but does it say in the text that there were children among those who were swallowed up?
Doesn't it say the opposite? It says
B'nai Korach
later.
Some of them.
Just the sons,
literal.
Right.
Just
the sons,
the
tshuva. Right. So how do you know what happened to the others? You don't know. But the rest of
it's
called
a dot.
It's called
a
dot.
Yeah. I don't think we can come at any definitive conclusions over there, really.
But there are other examples.
It was only the dissenters, not necessarily the children.
There are other examples where God kills children, well, not Jewish children that I can think of, but Egyptian firstborn children.
Sure.
That's
war for sure.
The war against Peter.
Also a war.
Is it the Yahweh, is it? Or Elisha?
No.
It's like bad.
The opposite.
Yeah, that was ugly.
This is the opposite of war, right? In war, we say that you can kill the people in war, but you don't have to spare the kids. In this case, Hashem Davka selected the kids. It's the opposite. Wasn't that
in Mitzrayim?
Mitzrayim.
They were all children, though.
Seder. So right, that's true.
They were all children.
Yeah, that's true.
Storm and Gomorrah.
But Meir's case is a funny case. That's Elisha when he got made fun of. And so he didn't kill him.
No,
he got the bears to kill him. Got the bears. They were kids, yeah. Okay, let's keep going. Okay, here's the Chakira, right? Yesh lach kor beikar din ben tzor amora. Im ze din onesh al chet o ze din hatzala. Right, which we've said. Is it an onesh or it is some kind of way of saving him? Okay, I just told you about this. Rashi versus Tosfos is over there. Rashi says you're saving the murderer. Fine. You kill the rodef before he does it. So that's the chakira. Are we saving him or are we punishing him? So now he's going to start the analysis. Maybe you'll say it's an onesh. So Ati Shapir, it's good the be'in and gadlus. If it's an onesh, then we can explain why you need godless. That makes sense. That you need to be an adult. Look, if it's about an onesh, then you need to wait until he's old enough to punish him. But if it's about
prevention,
yeah. Then why should you have to wait until he's old enough? If he's an 8-year-old and he's exhibiting these signs, then you should be able to kill him.
Sorry.
One of you.
No, we're stuck in an infinite loop here.
if it's an 8-year-old, there's still time for him to do tshuva.
I was thinking that too. Yeah.
Sorry, what?
There's still time for him to do tshuva if it's an 8-year-old.
Yeah, I don't understand the concept of mutabi mutzakai.
At any age.
So let's go over the tshuva.
A 12 and a half year old also.
No, the Gemara tells you specific actions. Specific things which apparently are enough of an indication that there's no redemption for this child. That's what's going on. What does he have to do? He has to steal from his father. We didn't talk about this. We have to steal meat and wine from his father. He has to do that more than once, by the way. There's a two-step process for the Ben Tzorah. He does the stuff, he gets brought to Beit, and he gets warned not to do it again, and then he does it again. He steals from his father specifically, and then buys stuff and eats it with bad people and not in any good context. And it's like very specific stuff. I'm not saying that I know that I would have made the judgment call.
You just get skill. I mean, you get skill for half a dozen things in the Torah. That's the onesh of skill. Yeah. It's not a special punishment.
It's the worst punishment.
You get skill for many things that you do.
Yeah, what's the point?
So I'm not sure. If stealing from the father, you just have to give it back.
Yes, exactly.
I'm just saying, what?
I know, that's what makes it so unique.
It's against the whole concept of... you mean to say that even him dying would not be mechaper on what he did?
It wouldn't need to be because the theory is that what he's done so far is only the tip of the iceberg. He's going to do much worse later, so we're saving him from doing all of that.
No, but we're saving him from doing stuff that even his dying wouldn't be mechaper.
Yeah. Yeah, so?
That's why we're saving him from it.
So why?
You're saying, because just wait, let him do it, and then his
conviction,
we'll give him kapara. So why?
So you say, why would we not want to do that?
No, but why?
What is it?
Why would we not want to do that? But you all, why would we not want to do that? Why would you not want to just say, okay, you go do it?
Might do damage to someone else.
Okay, so that's one thing. That's one thing.
May murder someone else.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to say, okay, you could have killed Hitler as a baby, but you didn't because you said, oh, he'll die at the end of his life and he'll be mechaper for everything. What do you mean?
No, the argument here at this stage is...
I know what I just did, by the way.
the argument here is we're doing it in order to save him, not to save others. Now you're adding an extra element, we're doing it also to save others.
I am adding that. I don't know why he doesn't, but he doesn't. But I'm also going to suggest it's not only that. It's also there's a big difference between saying let him do a lot of sins and then get kapara, versus saying if this is an option versus saying let's just prevent him from doing it. Would you not agree with me that it's better that he never have done it?
Yeah, but it's
I get there's a risk.
As they say.
Agreed.
Agreed. We can save many people.
It's a slippery slope, but you know what? Chazal made it not a slippery slope because they live in it.
This is a specific case where
exactly. I would never say this. I would never say this, and you would never say this. And in fact, Chazal tried to say it as little as possible, right? Based on their tradition,
this is the one case that the Torah says that this applies to.
Right.
But how do you know?
The Baruch Hu says, I'm giving up on him.
Yeah.
From day one.
Yes. By the way, and just to make it even more, you know what the Gemara says about the Ben Tzorah Moreh, that it never happened.
It's theoretical.
So in other words, it takes all the sting out of it, and it indicates that it's almost the exception that proves the rule, in a way. in terms of tshuva.
But I don't think you have to have a case where you can have a situation where he doesn't hurt anybody, like he breaks Shabbat, for example, and he doesn't get kapar. Who says he's going to get kapar? Maybe he goes and breaks Shabbat every Shabbat to the mezid, etc., and just never gets arrested or never gets killed and never gets kapar.
The Rambam says what the rules are kapar, are for kapara.
You can hold it over yourself's head. You can hold it over your head. You
there's some things that death doesn't even machaper for. There's some things that death doesn't machaper for, according to not just the Rambam, but Kuspidai in the Gemara Numa. Chil Hashem, death does not machaper from Chil Hashem. So, I mean, anyways, let's get back to the point.
Another point, Eir Nidachat is another one of the ones that never happened.
Yeah.
Yep.
Eir Nidachat, Ben Tzora Mora, and
Bayit
HaMenuga. Yes, that's right. And of course, Rav Yochanan disagrees and says that he saw them. And the Bayit HaMenuga, the Bayit that gets Tzara'at.
Yeah.
Maybe also the Bayit didn't kill anybody. There's an opinion that Bayit never actually killed anybody.
No, there's no bit. No, there's
70 years.
Right. Yeah. No, somebody said I didn't kill anybody in 70 years, and then they criticized him for that.
I believe that there was an opinion. I thought that there was an opinion that Beitin never actually killed anybody.
Wasn't there a story that Beitin killed one person in 70 years, and they were called?
That's one of the opinions. I believe it's all every 700 years, and I thought that.
No, not 700. 70. No, there's no 700. And they get criticized.
I got criticized for that. I don't remember, but
it gets criticized for that for not, because they say, well, what does that mean for society?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's keep going. So he says it makes more sense to say that it's geder onesh because there is an age limit. Omnam, he says, Lashon Gemara b'samach l'tu hecha ashkan da onesh akatuv da achali bai kra l'miftere. The Gemara itself says, why do you need a pasuk to tell you they don't give a punishment? V'chein lashon Rambam lo onesh akatuv katan shelo ba lichal mitzvot. The Rambam says they don't give a punishment to a katan. So in the previous sentence he'd said that if it's Nerag al Shem Sofo, then it sounds like it's not an Onesh. He's still just going back and forth. Let's go to Hay. Alright. In Hay he says, V'chein muchach midin hatra'a. Okay, we didn't talk about this, but there is a din of hatra over here, of warning. Shekaz of Rambam, shematrin kekol dinei hatra. Rambam says that you actually bring the boy to Beit Din the first time around and give him a warning. You know, you got to stop this, otherwise this isn't going to end well. And the Rambam describes it as being hatra like all other hatra'at.
Hatra doesn't need to be in front of Beit Din. Just
no, it doesn't. It doesn't usually need to be.
But this one does.
What he means by kol dinei hatra means that you have to specify what the isur is as well as what the punishment will be. That's what he means.
Yeah, but just with Eidim, not with Eidim.
And there has to be Eidim, yeah. Well, you're doing it in Beit Din in this case, but yeah. Ayin b'milchas chinuch shedikta midivei Rav debina shiyater atzmo lemita. He has to accept that he could die for this, which means it's like an onesh. Elisha b'Rashi v'masnitzin mevor deinu kekol malkos amisa ukfar tamo alav yad rama. The Rashi disagrees. The Rashi yesh kan geder mechudash aval al kol panim the Rambam muchach gam mizeh to kol dini Torah sasra halav kekol onshim. If you needed hasra, that also indicates that it's not about protecting him, because why would you need to give him a warning if it was about protecting him? It sounds like it's more like an onesh. So now, what does he do? He's stuck between these two, so he's going to try to find a path in the middle. Fiza mavur hetev ma beinan sheyavo lichlal mitzvot sheyeh bar onshin kamo b'kol onesh acher. It sounds like he has to be an adult so that he can be bar onesh. Elamiyo delfizet zarech ber mani amav nidon l'shem sofo. So why we have nidon l'shem sofo? Anenesh b'seder onshi atorak kol niskalin. V'tzarech lomid zerak biur chomer ha'onesh. So he wants to differentiate between two aspects of the verdict of a ben tzora mora. One is the chomer onesh, v'lo al etzem onesh. V'alamalkut ein kan inyan al shem sofo klal, elamada acharei achila shnia neherag. There's a malkus at the beginning. V'af abisha zel ota avera, v'af abisha gadol enu neherag al zeh gam b'shtei pamim, u'balkorcha k'sarech lomer, d'masha tor hechmir alav, davka b'chrum rezu shalmita, mazbirin d'balkorcha ein zel al shem sofo. In other words, he is killed because he's being nidon al shem sofo. In other words, the quality of the punishment, the choice of punishment is nidon Hashem sofa. However, the fact of the punishment is a punishment. In other words, the child needs to be a bar onchin to punish him. But when we are sentencing him, we sentence him al shem sofa. That's what he wants to say. In order to it is a punishment.
Further, what he does now.
It is a punishment.
It's not what,
however, the
it's
punishment,
a punishment for his current sins.
The threshold
is not.
The threshold for looking into his future is the current sins. But then we look in, once he reaches that threshold, we look into his future in order to determine the severity of the crime, of the punishment.
It's kind of like a judge deciding on how he wants to sentence the right. A judge decides on a sentence, right? Once guilt is determined, the judge can decide how he wants to sentence the person. And he takes lots of factors into account, right? So it's kind of similar to that, I think. That once we determine that he needs to be punished, which couldn't happen before he's 13, because he's not a bar onshin, he's a juvenile. Once that's determined, though, the sentence can be
changed. So what's he guilty of?
You know what he's guilty of. He's not guilty of future crimes, but we're trying to prevent the future crimes. And we are given
that. He's not guilty of having done anything.
Well, he's guilty of what he's done, for sure.
But is that what he's being punished for?
But he's being
food from his father.
But he's not exactly being punished.
But he's being punished for that, though.
I have to agree, that does sound rather awkward.
It's also complicated.
I don't like what he said about Hatra'ah implying that he's being punished. Because it could be that if somebody had Hatra'ah and they still did it, that is indicative of the type of person who will come to do such a bad thing.
But then why did the Rambam say Hatra'ah k'kol dinei Torah?
Because if somebody still does it even though he was warned properly, then that's a pretty bad person.
You can say that about him going
to understand what you're saying. However, it seems like an overloading of the term. In other words, the term Hatra'ah and k'kol dinei Torah is, we know what the context is, in order to be able to hold him accountable for what he's done. He needs to say, I am aware of what I'm doing, and I'm doing it anyways, knowing what's going to happen to me. That's the purpose of Hatra'ah.
Sure.
But here, you might say that it's also useful to indicate how much of a Rasha he is. But it's like an overloading of the term for a different context. I think that's where he's coming from.
What you're saying about Hatra'ah can be said about an adult as well as a youngster. For someone who's willing to commit this error, even after Hatra'ah, tells you he's not a great person.
Sure. In fact, I might say that maybe we're misstating the purpose of punishment. I mean, I don't know if punishment really is supposed to be retributive. I think it's supposed to be more preventative. Or maybe also to try to
teach a lesson to the society.
Exactly.
Societal.
Yeah.
I think it's more modern sort of take of punishment. Mm-hmm.
No, there are different versions of this.
I think that the key to figuring out is trying to work out prevention for who. I think we figure out if the prevention is for him, if the prevention for his potential victims.
I think that's a third thing. I think there's a three.
Shed light on
or prevention for others who might be copycats.
That's the society.
No, but it's a different thing. That's a good point. In other words, it could be four things that I had up here.
Yeah, but I think we figured that out, that because this line, this middle line that he's trying to steer in terms of he has to be punished because of what he did, but the severity of the punishment is because of what's going to happen in the future. That sounds like it's preventative. That doesn't sound like preventative. That sounds, if preventative is preventing for his victims, it doesn't sound like you're trying to help him at all. You're just trying to punish him because of the bad things he did.
The reason to not say it's about the victims is that it doesn't use the language of Laman Yishmu V'Yirao, and it doesn't have any of those kinds of societal concerns. It seems to be centered on him. And by the way, one of the other indications of this, I don't know which way this sways things, but it's actually up to the parents to bring the child. They can choose not to bring the child, which is another reason why it's never happened.
What kind of parents are going to do that?
Yeah. And perhaps the parent that's going to do that.
There have been times.
You know?
We've all been there.
I have to think that hashgafically, that punishments in general are preventative or rehabilitative.
I don't know if there's only one option. It could be that some go one way and some go another.
Sure, but I don't think that it ever could be like vindictive.
Not vindictive. It could be retribution. It could be compensatory.
But you tipped your hand when you said that that the warning is in order to be able to give him the punishment if he understood what he did. I would have thought, like what you're saying, the warning is to say he'll stop doing it.
The point you're missing is that you have to understand a 10-year-old, as you know them today, doing this.
What?
A 10-year-old
right.
doing this. You're dealing with a sociopath. You're not going to be rehabilitative.
Right.
It's been a one-way ticket.
The Gemara obviously never heard of ADHD.
Not
10-year-old
boys, right?
No, that's an interesting thing. Sociopath.
You're actually dealing with a...
The diagnosis of a sociopath is relatively new.
And the parents could be there for their own lives. They might want to bring him to death there.
That's probably the best.
Window. That's the issue.
That's probably the best translation of Ben Sobar, really, is sociopath.
No, but it's somebody not that it's not a. You don't decide. It's what the Torah says. That's what it is.
Of
it's
course.
Understand how bad this boy.
No, because Mike. We have to keep in mind. Not all sociopaths are bad. Being sociopathic doesn't mean that you're a bad person. It just means you can't understand why people are good. There are sociopaths who are...
The definition of a behavioral sociopath that does these kind of things, they're not going to be really bad. They've got a disorder.
Probably.
It's not medicated.
And we're saying that...
Persons are full of this. Yeah. Because they're already murdered. Right.
And it seems to me that the DSM is saying that hatra'a is an indicator that he's a sociopath.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying, and if all we said was if all the Rambam had said is matrin oto, like the Mishnah, like the Gemara says, then fine, it's the kikol Torah, kikol dinei Torah. That's the part that he's jumping on, not the idea of hatra itself. The idea of hatra itself, of course, can be explained either way. Okay, so that is his approach towards this, a very thorny issue. You know, are we punishing him? Are we saving him? So he says we're doing both. We can only punish him when he becomes of age, but the punishment that we choose is based on what we expect from him in the future. If you turn over the page, so we'll cover this subject a little bit, of how do we know when a person is an adult or a child? So the Gemara talks about, the Mishnah talks about Sa'arot and an age of 13. So the Rambam says as follows in Hilchos Ishi, it says, Habat Shialda, אחר 12 שנה, אף הפי שלא הביא הסימן, לא עיון ולא תחתון, הרי זו גדולה. Once she's 12 years old, even if she has not had any of the סימנים, she's still an adult. בנים הרי הם כסימנים. But בנים, having a child, having a baby, that's like a סימן. All right? In other words, if she has a child, she's an adult. Kind of like what Meg was talking about, but for girls. All right. Okay. Now,
so the
simanin over same, here is it could be
it's the same
hair,
for boy and a girl.
It could be
saying.
Why
giving batsha yolda?
No, well, I mean, a woman giving birth could be at a different age than a boy having viable.
A difference.
What?
Are we saying banim as in her children? Boys need simanin.
No. If she has children, then it's an indication that she's a gedola.
So boys, we don't consider age. Is that what it's saying?
Well, he doesn't talk about it.
For girls, it's 12.
The point over here, though, is that we've got kind of an ambivalent relationship with the simanim, because on the one hand, he says, I don't care about... on the one hand, he says that the age is kovea, whether or not she has hair or not. And then he says that banim harein ki simanim, which sounds like even before she becomes 12. She could become an adult. Right. Sounds like it. Whichever one comes first. Now, what does it mean for us? And let's say, what does it mean for boys? So we have in the poskim, look at the Shuta Marit. So the Marit, living in, I think, the 14th century, I believe, says, V'tam divrei divrei b'shanim v'simanim. So what I've been talking about, this whole context over there, about years and simanim. Eina ikar hagados. He says, actually, you know what between years and simanim, neither one is what really determines gadlus, about whether or not somebody is an adult. Shehen gormin hadin, the shanim v'simanim lo k'tivei b'kra, because there's no pasuk that talks anything about age or hair. Ela gedola uktana k'tivei, it just talks about being an adult and being a minor. U'misaru lanu simanim l'havchin ben gedola l'tana. But we have been given signs, we've been given simanim, and the simanim are age, and hairs. V'hem sarot l'achar zman. That's the sign. The sign is how many hairs, but that halachically, the sign is growing hairs after 13. I'll clarify that more later, but the hairs that are grown after 13. Ulahachi kari lehu simanim, that's why we call them simanim. Sheinam ele siman shal yadam nikeret hagdula, aval eina naset hi atzma gdola al yadam. I'm not going to read the whole thing inside, but basically, you get what he's saying. What he's saying is that don't mistake the simanim for being...
the definition.
The definition. They're not what make you an adult. Having the pubic hairs, that's not what makes a boy an adult. It's just an indication. Him becoming an adult is a little bit more ethereal, a little bit more ephemeral. We haven't put our finger on it yet. It's something that happens to somebody at some point, but it can be proven through the simanim. Now he goes through a little bit more of the Ar Gemara actually, and talks about how Bedorot HaRishonim, they used to have children at the age of 8. And it shows from Betzal ben Uri ben Chur, v'gam mikodem, and even from before, and even earlier, v'al korchach me'ot ozman ha'vukaru lo gdula. And at that age, when they were having children at a young age, they were actually considered gedolim. In other words, in the past, you could have a bar mitzvah at 8.
You call it a bar mitzvah with all the qualifications of a bar mitzvah. He can.
Why not?
He can sign a contract. He can buy land. He can get married.
At that time, yeah. When that was true.
He can be called. He can be part of a minyan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It could be a Ben Zohar Amora, yeah. I told you that at that time. One of my favorite short stories by Ray Bradbury, he has a story about this humans crash land on a different planet, and on the planet, the sun, the way that it works, it's so strong that it makes people age much faster than on Earth. That's the story. And so people live in one mountain, they live to the age of 7 days old. And on the other mountain, they live to the age of 8 days old. So everybody in the 7 day old mountain try to fight their way into the mountain of the 8 days old. And the way that it's a short story, he describes the child growing up like hyper fast. It's just a fascinating thought experiment. So it's similar to that. So, they grew up faster. It sounds like it means biologically, nishtanu atvayim, something like that. That nature has changed. It's not unheard of. That's what he's describing. And he says, by the way, and the reason why he chooses children is because the Gemara seems to choose children. Because the only place where it seems to attribute a siman to the Torah itself is where? In Rabbah's statement. Because remember, Rabbah said, Im ein l'ish go'el, how can you have an ish that doesn't have a go'el? That you don't have to look for children, for descendants? It must be a ger katan. Because if he's a ger katan, then he doesn't have any children. Because the moment he becomes a gadol, then he can have children. And you'd have to search for them. And he's attributing that to the meaning of the pasuk. So that's the only real indication of whether or not somebody is an adult, is whether or not they can have children. Now, we can't use that as a dividing line, right? In practice, we can't use that to decide whether or not somebody is a gadol. It's just not going to work practically. So we have other things. But that seems to be the only real indication of whether somebody is a gadol or a katan. So now he says... Not new. I'm looking in the underlined part. Not new. Chachamim shiur simanim lekatana bat shnemes. Right? I don't know why that's not shnemes. Right? A girl is 12. Hold on. Lekatan ben shloshes. Right? And for a boy is 13. Bedorot achronim not new zasiman. That is relatively recent. I don't know how old he's saying it is, but that is only a siman. Harilan mehedjesh ena gadlu talei b'shanim degadlos inyan b'fnei atzmo. Not new chachamim siman lefnei asman. They gave us simanim to use practically for every generation. And what does he say this means practically from a halachic perspective? Nimsa, this is the payoff. It's a small payoff for a big theory. Nimsa shikshanu mistapkin beribui, sorry, mistapkin be, not sure what that word is, beribui zu, Ein lanu lomar safek higiel leklal shanim v'safek yivya shtei sarot she'elu simanim hin aval nomar safek adayin ketana safek higdila. What if you have a situation where you have a child in front of you and you don't know his age and you don't know whether or not he's grown pubic hairs, but he seems to be a gadol, and you want to know whether or not he can perform as an adult? Can you pull out a sfeik sfeika and say, well, he may be 13 and he may have shtei sarot, and therefore we can be makel?
What's the context?
Whatever context you pick. Can he read Parsha Zachor? Pick that one.
I give us something because you can check.
You can't check it. He won't let you. I don't know.
Oh, but it's the same. Then it's the same suffix. It's the same.
Okay, you know what? He read already for the congregation, and then he left town. Okay. Were you yotze or not?
All right. It's the same suffix. Suffix is with result. Don't talk this.
Good. Okay. Yes, exactly. So amateurs would say, oh, it's a sfeik sfeika. He could be 13. He could have the sarot. So let's put them together and say he's a gadol. So the Ma'arit says no. It's only about gadlus. Is he a gadol or not? You can't. Those aren't two sfeikot. The only suffix here is he a gadol or not? Right. Those are just two kinds of simanim. Those are not two sfeikot. They would be two sfeikot if they were themselves definitionally categories of adulthood.
So then they could be just. If he was a boy or a girl, it read.
So you have to have a suffix ashakol. It has to be like a real suffix.
That could be a real suffix.
Not sure if it's a boy or a girl.
We haven't been very theoretical. I mean, left town. I don't know if that was a boy.
What do you mean? You don't know if it was a boy or a girl? Like, what does that mean?
I don't know. Someone said that wasn't a boy; that it was a girl.
Okay. Sfeik sfeika, I guess.
Theoretically, it's sfeik sfeika.
Unless you say a girl could be motzi. You got another issue about whether or not a girl is chayav. Forget Kriyas HaTorah. Forget Kriyas HaTorah.
Parsha
Samalek. Parsha Zachor. Machlok is Rambam versus Sefer Achinach about whether or not women are chayavos in Parsha Zachor.
So I've got to go in 10 minutes. I'm sorry.
Okay. So you want to do a marv now?
I'm sorry.
You got to go in 10 minutes. If you want to do a marv now, then we got to do a marv now. We can finish up a little bit after.
Lingu Taraz is a bigger mitzvah than marv.
That's true. But we can get back to the Lima Torah.
Ah.
So we can get back to it.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
It's okay? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that was the Ma'arit. Establishing that it's just one issue and not really two issues. I think we're going to skip the Rashba. I'm just looking at it right now. I didn't... see if there's... All right, we go straight to the Shulchan Aruch. So the Shulchan Aruch says, "Yesh lilmod zchut al hamekamot shenogim shaktanim yordan lifnei ateva liyitpalal tefilas arvis motzei shabbatos." So the Shulchan Aruch says it's really not so bad that in some communities a katan goes to daven tefilas arvis on motzei Shabbos.
This is age, right? Now katan is only age.
Yes. Yeah. When we say katan, it's not katan. Yeah, not katan. So he says, I don't know, in some communities, the minhag was specifically on Motzei Shabbos, for some reason, a child with daven ma'ariv. Do you know anything about this? I don't know anything about this. Sfardi, yeah. And he says, yesh l'mod zchud, which means he doesn't like it, but he thinks it's not the worst thing in the world. So the Ramah says, "Uba mekomo shelo nagu
ke." Is it like sometimes they have for a cousin to do a Kabbalah Shabbos?
Yeah, but this is Ma'ariv.
Kabbalah Shabbat's not a tefillah.
This is Ma'ariv, it's Baruch Hu and everything, I think.
Some Scottish shuls have a cotton
relays. Not the interior of the, meaning not like Rishon Sheni, like Kohen Levi Shlishi. Maybe Shabbos Mincha, maybe the Maftir. And the Ramah says a place where there's not the minug, ain lekatan la'avor lifnei ateva, afilu b'tfiras arvis, afilu higi. I don't know afilu. I should have looked up Nirshu Ravura. I'm sure that he explains why it's afilu. Maybe tfiras arvis obviously is better than shachris and mincha, maybe because it's rishus. Who does?
Ramah here in the second part.
Afilu higi leklal yud gemoshanim b'yom haShabbos ain lispala arvis shal Shabbos. There are dain ain lo yud gemoshanim. Instead of Motzei Shabbos? Yeah. I don't know why he switched it then. Anyways, though, he says, even if he's gotten to 13 on Shabbos, he shouldn't be davening for the Amud. Okay. Because he's not yet 13.
Our day begins at Arvid.
Yeah. No, so the point is over here, he was born at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then on 13 years from that day, he wants to daven Mariv and Leil Shabbos of that Shabbos.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
So the Rama says he shouldn't be davening.
Why is that worse than davening Shacharit?
He shouldn't be davening Shacharit either.
So we go according to the exact time.
It sounds like something like that. That's what the Rama is saying. Yeah. 100%. Meaning, it
makes sense.
It sounds like something.
You can't daven in the night. You can't daven in the night.
On the same day.
Yeah.
Presumably because he hasn't finished the day yet. Yeah.
So that's the reason.
Okay. You mean you want to say that according to the Rama, even if he was born at 9 o'clock at night, he can't daven Maariv at 10 o'clock at night?
So the
Magen Avraham says, "V'adam rinan b'kol makom yud gemoshana v'yom echad perish to bein and yud gemoshana shleimim v'kevin shematcha yom shenolad bo yom echad karinan be." So says you need the extra day, you need a full 13 years. That's what that means. Yom echad doesn't mean you need an extra day. It means on that new day, right from the beginning of that new day. The Prima Gadim comments, he says, look at the Levush, Machikashav She'ein Motzi Achem, Anan Kamilan de Motzi, Ela'ein Kavod Atzibor Shekatan Yotzi Atzibor. Prima Gadim disagrees with the Magen Avraham and says that you actually can, but we don't because it's not Kavod Atzibor to have a child do it. Now, is this agreed upon by everybody? So we took a look at the note of Yehuda. Because the truth is, the Magen Avraham is actually trying to be Makel. He's trying to say that we don't have to have an extra day. You just need 13 full years, which it almost sounds like the actual time of the day. If you knew the time of the day, then that would actually be fine.
We had the exact issue.
When?
The
Shabbos was the same day.
Shabbat evening, and it was that Shabbat was his birthday.
And so he leaned? Because
it was after 9 o'clock.
Right, because it was after. He didn't die. Okay, perfect.
Yes.
Good. So that's how the Magen Avraham reads the Rama. Right, one could have read the Rama like Meir is that no, you need to wait until the end of the day, right? But that's the way that the Magen Avraham reads the Rama, which is that you just need, like, to that moment.
So my nephew did daven Maariv the night of his bar mitzvah.
Even though he wasn't yet technically 13 years.
Maybe he was born for the night, I don't know. Right. His father was off, so.
Or they didn't look into it. Now,
you're going to have to have a again.
Now there's, so the Noda Behuda says, B'katan she'gele klal yud gemoshanu b'miktsas hayom im letzar filasara. The Noda Behuda was asked this question. What happens if I want to add a child to my minion? And I know that he's turned 13 today, but it's only part way through the day.
Do we say I might have mixed mixes ayom kikulo?
So no.
It's
but let's see. Yeah, you could have said mixes ayom kikulo. You could have. You could have said, okay, this is my 13th year day, and once half the day is over, then that's like the whole day is over. You could have said that. Don't think he says that. Lo yadati ma'u besupak. He said, what's the problem? Well, kvar pashata minat gedivar magen Avraham. The teivchav kishechashcha leil yom shenolecho. Dainu leil ashayachlo. Oh, you know what? Sorry, Dad, you're right. Leil ashayachlo. Shiela makrato. Ota yom barhode shenolecho kvar mikri venyu gimel. Yom echad v'rashay lavor lefinat teva. Sounds like he's saying, mixes yom kukulo. All you need is that night. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's what magen Avraham says, but okay. Machikazam alozim dimidir arambam nira shavina yom shalem. He wanted to say that. Okay, so there's almost three shitas over here about how to do this between the Noda Behuda, the Prima Gadim, then we got Magen Avraham and the Shochet, and there are one read in the Ramah. The one thing that I did want to point out, which I referenced before, and I saw some people raise their eyebrows, which is Pashut, is that now that we hold of 13 years old, right? So this makes the actual cases a little bit more complicated. It's less complicated because it wasn't Parshas Zachor. As long as it's not Parshas Zachor, these things aren't such a big deal. But technically speaking, in order to be a Gadol, you need 13 years and Shnei Saros, right? Except that the Shnei Saros have to grow after the 13 years. In other words, you could have plenty of children. You can have plenty of kids. I mean, I don't know what the statistics are, but I'm sure plenty of kids turn 13 and have already pubic hairs. Probably have, some of them have many. Those are meaningless. That's what makes this, by the way, impossible to check, because you can't really check that. You have to have 13 plus two new hairs after 13.
Isn't it the kind of 13 and then again in the future?
Isn't it kind of a chazakah that if you're 13 and then
but it wouldn't help.
You have,
the point is it doesn't help.
After you're 13.
Because the hairs have to grow after. That's why we don't let children read Parsha Sachar. Because for that, you need a gadol to be yotzei midar ra'isa, and the chances that he's actually grown two hairs since he turned 13 are actually quite low. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what they are.
We don't know.
And there's no way to know. So when it comes to reading the Kriyas HaTorah, so Midorabanan, it's all Midorabanan anyways. So it's kind of Midorabanan to read the Torah on Shabbos or at all. So we can be Mekel in terms of whether he's a Katan or Gadol. He has to be a Gadol, but we can't, you know, we can be Mekel. And you know, on the off chance that he's possibly a Gadol, we can be Mekel. But for Parsha Zachar, we can't.
We don't let a 13-year-old read Parsha Zachar?
No.
No?
Somebody who just turned 13. Like a bar mitzvah boy, we don't let bar mitzvah boys read.
So, what age do we let him read it? Parsha Zachor?
I guess
14, 13 and a half.
No, maybe even a week after. I guess I don't know.
So that there would be time for it to.
There would be time, but you don't know if it happened or not.
No.
Okay.
So I don't know.
I mean, and
I think we try to avoid.
I don't know anybody who wants to go check either.
You probably wouldn't let. I don't know. As a policy, I would assume probably most shuls wouldn't let a 13-year-old read Parsha Zachor. I assume if they asked the rabbi would probably. Say no.
14-year-old is okay?
I guess so.
13 and a half?
Yeah, I guess so. It's not surprising.
Right. Actually, I do know.
I mean, it's not that hard to get another person to read it again afterwards, but it would be kind of embarrassing.
I was Parsha Zachar when he did read it.
He did or did not?
He did.
He did, but did somebody else read also?
No.
That's weird.
How many times did he read it?
Oh, that's weird.
What's interesting, the thing is, you often have a bar mitzvah boy for Ki Teitze.
No, I'm sorry.
That's not
the Shabbos.
But you say,
I'm sorry.
You say correct. You say to people who miss Zachor, can you have a day?
Yeah.
I correct myself. The bar mitzvah boy did not read Zachor. His bar mitzvah was on Parsha Zachor, but the Shabbos read the Zachor.
There you go. There you go.
You learned Shved.
Oh, yeah? Okay. There you go. All right. Shkoyach.
Shkoyach.